If possible, Lysias interrupted eagerly, I should very much like him to share our home during his period of observation. My mother would welcome him as another son. I looked gratefully at my generous companion. Clarence, in his turn, also gave him a look of approval, saying, Very well, Lysias. Jesus rejoices with us whenever we open our hearts to a new friend. Unable to express my gratitude in words, I embraced my companion. Great joy can sometimes render us speechless. Keep this document, Clarence continued, handing me a small folder, it will serve as a permit to admittance to the ministries of regeneration, assistance, communication and elucidation for the period of 1 year. After that, we shall see what else can be done. Don't waste your time, my friend, learn all you can. Remember that the intervals between earthly sojourns must be worthily filled. I left the minister's office elated, arm in arm with Lysias. After a few minutes' walk, we arrived at a graceful cottage surrounded by a colorful garden. Here we are, he announced. He rang a small bell, adding, This is our home within the astral city. A soft ringing was heard inside the house and pleasant lady opened the door. Mother, Lysias called out, introducing me, here is the brother I promised you. Welcome, my friend, she exclaimed hospitably, please consider this house your home. Embracing me as if I were a true son, she added, I understand that your mother doesn't live here. Therefore, you will have in me a sister, involved in maternal duties. I did not know how to thank her for her generous welcome. I was about to try, when she quickly interjected. You are forbidden to mention thanks. Please don't, or you would force me to remember some long-forgotten conventional earthly phrase for the sake of etiquette. We all laughed, and I added, May the Lord receive my gratefulness and pour it on this house as renewed blessings of peace and joy. We walked in. Everything was simple and comfortable. The furniture and objects were, on the whole, much like those on earth. There were pictures of deep spiritual significance, an unusually large piano, and resting on it a harp of delicate design. Lysias, ready as usual to satisfy my curiosity, spoke. As you know, you were not met by harpist angels when you left earth. Instead, the harp before you awaits our own abilities. Now Lysias, stop joking, his mother interrupted affectionately, do you remember that last year their Ministry of Divine Union invited some of the residents of the Ministry of Elevation to hear some master musicians who passed through our city? Indeed I do, mother. I only meant to say that harpists really exist, but in order to hear them we must develop our sense of spiritual hearing by striving for the knowledge of divine things. Later on, after giving some introductory information about myself, I learned that Lysias's family came from an old town in the state of Rio de Janeiro, that his mother's name was Laura, and that his two sisters, Yolanda and Judith, lived with him as well. I was delighted at my first experience of domesticity in the colony. The home atmosphere encouraged a sweet and heartwarming intimacy, and the family's gracious welcome stirred deep emotions in my spirit. As I was filled with questions, my kind hostess showed me some wonderful books. Perceiving my interest, she informed, As for literature, we have an enormous advantage here in the Astral City. All insidious writers, those who use their art to instill psychological poison, go straight to the lower zones, and as long as they persist in such a state they cannot stay here, not even in the Ministry of Regeneration. I could not help smiling as I marveled at the beautiful specimens of photographic art in the books she showed me. Afterwards, Lysias took me around the house, calling my attention to the bathing chamber, which was filled with interesting fixtures. Everything was so simple, yet so comfortable. I had hardly gotten over my amazement, when Laura summoned us to prayer. We sat in silence around a big table. As she switched on a large screen, I heard soft music, it was the evening service. I saw the familiar image of the government house, which had captured my attention so often in the hospital park. Now, However, a deep and mysterious happiness filled me as the blue heart appeared in the background, and my soul was filled with joy and gratefulness. Chapter 18, Love, the Food of Souls. As soon as the prayer was over, Laura invited me to the evening meal, which consisted of invigorating broth and flagrant fruits which tasted more like a delicious blend of concentrated fluids. I heard Laura remark genially. After all, our meals here are far more agreeable than they were on Earth. We have some districts which dispense with them together, but in their zone of the Ministry of Assistance we can't do so. Here the heavy tasks we perform consume a great deal of our energy. Hence, we are obligated to be continually making provisions of energy. That, however, added one of the young ladies, doesn't mean that we who work at the Ministries of Assistance and Regeneration are the only ones to depend on food. The other ministries, including Divine Union, don't dispense with it. The only difference in the food is the nature of its substance. In communication and elucidation, fruit is widely used, while in elevation, juices and concentrated fluids are more common. As for the Ministry of Divine Union, the process of nutrition goes beyond the imagination. Eager for immediate explanations, I shifted my gaze from Alicia's to his mother. Everybody smiled at my natural perplexity, but Laura satisfied my curiosity. You may not be aware, my friend, that love is the major sustaining element for all creatures. From time to time, large delegations of instructors come to visit our city in order to convey the principles of spiritual nutrition. Love is the fundamental basis of all systems of nourishment in the different spheres of life. Physical diet, properly considered, is always a question of transitory materiality, even here, as in the case of the earthly machines that need grease and oil. Love, and only love, is the source of sustenance for the soul. The more we ascend along the evolutionary plan of creation, the more thoroughly we understand that great truth. Don't you think that divine love is the mainspring of the universe? Those explanations comforted me considerably, and Lysias added, God's infinite love is the center of equilibrium of all creation. The more evolved the created beings, the subtler their processes of nutrition. The worm in the ground feeds mainly on earth. Larger animals find the necessary elements for nourishment in plants. Man gathers the fruits of these plants and prepares them according to his taste. We, who are already free of our physical bodies, need fluidical, juicy substances. The process becomes even more delicate as we advance in our ascent. But we mustn't forget the question of vehicles, Laura added, for after all, worms, animals, man and ourselves depend exclusively on love. We all move about in it and no existence would be possible without it. Don't you remember the gospel lesson which says, love one another? When Jesus taught this principle, he didn't refer only to charity in its strictest sense, for we shall all have to learn, sooner or later, that the practice of good is simply a duty. He meant us to understand his words in a broader sense, that is, to sustain one another through brotherly love and sympathy. Sometime in the future, man on earth will discover that friendly words, mutual kindness and trust, understanding and fraternal interest, all fruits of deep love, are stimulating nourishment to life itself. When on earth, burdened by a physical body, we are under great limitation. But on returning here we realize that lasting and harmonious happiness is a question of purely spiritual sustenance. Homes, villages, towns and nations are formed in obedience to such principles. Instinctively I remembered the sex theories so widespread in the physical world, but Laura, recognizing my thoughts, remarked, you mustn't imagine that it is merely a sexual phenomenon. Sex is a sacred manifestation of universal and divine love, but it is only one of the many expressions of its infinite potential. With the more spiritualized couples, tenderness and trust, mutual devotion and understanding count far more than physical union, which is reduced to merely a transitory activity between them. It is magnetic exchange that establishes the necessary rhythm for the manifestation of harmony. The mere presence of the loved one, and sometimes a simple understanding is sufficient to nourish a feeling of joy. Availing herself of a lull in the conversation, Judith added, "We learn here in the astral city that love is the hub of life on Earth, yet most people never realize that important truth. Twin souls, kindred souls, and sympathetic souls form numerous pairs and groups. By gathering together and assisting one another, they succeed in advancing along the road to redemption. When, however, help is lacking, a weaker person usually fails before completing the journey." "As you see, my friend," remarked Lysias, "even here we are reminded of the gospel lesson, men shall not live by bread alone." At that point, the conversation was interrupted by the ringing of a bell. Lysias got up and answered the door. Two courteous young men came into the room. He greeted them cordially, introducing them as Polydor and Eustatius, from the Ministry of Elucidation. Greetings and handshakes followed, and after a few minutes, Laura said with a smile, "You have all worked hard today. You mustn't, therefore, alter your program on our account. It is time for you to set out on your planned excursion to the music park." Noticing Lysia's perturbed look, she added, "Go along, son. Don't keep Lysinia waiting. Our brother Andre will stay with me until he can accompany you on these excursions." "Please don't let me keep you at home," I exclaimed. "I can't yet enjoy the pleasure of going to the music park. My granddaughter returned from Earth a few days ago, and is still too weak to go out." They left, chatting joyfully. Laura shut the door, then turned to me and said, "They are going in search of the food we were talking about just now. The ties of love are stronger and more beautiful here. Love, my friend, is the divine bread of the soul, the sustenance of the heart." Chapter 19, The Newcomer. "Doesn't your granddaughter come for meals?" I asked Laura, leading the conversation to more intimate channels. "For the present, she takes her meals alone," she answered. "The poor thing is still nervous and run down, and no one in that condition is supposed to partake of collective meals. Neurasthenia and anxiety emit dense, poisonous fluids, which blend immediately with the food. My granddaughter spent a fortnight in the lower zones, in heavy slumber, closely assisted by us. She should have been lodged in a hospital pavilion when she came here, but it was decided that she would be placed under my direct care instead. I told Laura that I would be glad to visit the newcomer, and she willingly agreed. She led me to a spacious and comfortable room where a pale girl was lying in an easy chair. She was extremely surprised to see me as she looked up. "Heloi Isa," Laura said, introducing me, "here is a friend who arrived from Earth a short time ago." The young lady gazed at me curiously, and her tired, deeply shadowed eyes reflected her effort to concentrate. She greeted me with a wan smile as I introduced myself. I asked if she was tired, but before she could answer, her grandmother, anxious to spare her any strain, explained, "Heloi Isa has been restless and worried, and her fear is justified to a certain degree. Tuberculosis, which put an end to her earthly days after long suffering, has left deep traces on her astral body. Still, we must always be optimistic and courageous." At this, the young lady opened wide her deep, black eyes as if to hold back her tears, but unsuccessfully. Then she covered her face with her handkerchief and began to sob. "Poor little thing," said the kindly grandmother, putting her arms around the tearful girl, "you simply must control yourself. These impressions are due to a deficient religious education, that's all. You know that your mother won't be long in coming, and that you can't count on your fiancé's fidelity. He is by no means prepared to offer you sincere spiritual devotion on Earth, for he is still very far from possessing that sublime spirit of illuminated love. He is sure to marry someone else, and it is better that you become accustomed to this idea. It wouldn't be fair to insist on his coming here prematurely. Suppose he did come, forcing the law. Wouldn't your suffering be greater? Wouldn't you have to pay a heavy price for any share you might have had in bringing about his passing? You won't lack devoted friendship and brotherly cooperation to help you acquire your spiritual balance here, and if you really love the boy, you must try to adopt a harmonious attitude to be able to help him later. Besides, as I have already said, your mother will soon be here. The girl's tears filled me with pity. I tried to draw her attention to a different topic, leading the conversation away from this painful subject. "Where do you come from?" I asked. Laura, now silent, also seemed anxious to see her join in the conversation. After a long pause, during which she dried her tears, she replied, "From Rio de Janeiro." "You shouldn't cry so," I advised. "You don't know how lucky you have been. You passed over only a few days ago, and are already with your family. You didn't have to face any storms on the great journey." The girl seemed a little better, and said, "You can't imagine how much I've suffered. 8 months struggling with tuberculosis, in spite of all the treatments. The sorrow of having infected my devoted mother. All that my poor fiancé went through on my account. It's really indescribable." "Now, dear, don't say that," Laura said, smiling. "On earth we always seem to labor under the illusion that no suffering is greater than our own. It is mere blindness. There are millions of creatures facing situations much harsher and more cruel than our little experiences." "But grandmother, Arnold was so heartbroken and desperate," she answered. "It's all so hard to understand." "Do you really believe in your impressions?" Laura asked in a tender voice. "I observed your ex-fiancé several times during your infirmity. It was only natural that he should be so deeply affected at seeing the ruin of your physical body. But once more let me tell you, he can't understand pure sentiment, and will soon get over his sorrow. Remember, dear, that illuminated love is still above most creatures. Therefore, you must try to be of good cheer. No doubt you will be able to help him, but his being faithful to your memory is out of the question. When you are in a condition to visit the spheres of the planet, you will find him married to somebody else." Wondering myself, I noted Heloisa's painful surprise. The poor girl did not know what attitude to adopt before her grandmother's serenity and common sense. "Could that be possible?" she blurted out. Lizzie's mother, tenderly stroking the girl's hair, continued, "Now, child, you mustn't be obstinate or try to contradict me." Seeing that her granddaughter seemed to expect her to justify her words, she went on, speaking gently, "Do you remember Maria D'Aluz, the college friend who brought you flowers every Sunday? Well, when the doctor declared confidentially that your physical cure could not be expected, Arnold, though deeply grieved, began to involve her in different mental vibrations. And now that you are here, they won't take long before coming to an agreement." "Oh, grandmother. How awful." "Why awful? You must become accustomed to considering other people's needs. Your ex-fiancé is an ordinary man, still unable to appreciate the sublime beauty of spiritual love. However great your love may be, you can't work miracles in him. Every creature holds the exclusive privilege of discovering his own self. Arnold will, one day, know the beauty of your idealism, but for the present he must be left to live through these necessary experiences. I simply can't get over it. Maria D'Aluz, whom I always considered a most faithful friend." Laura smiled and advised wisely, "Won't it be better to entrust him to a friend? Maria D'Aluz will always be your spiritual friend, whereas another woman might, later, render the entrance to his heart difficult for your—" Heloisa started sobbing again. I felt greatly puzzled. The kind lady, sensing my perplexity, and eager to help me as well as her granddaughter, explained, "I know the cause of your tears, little one. They are the result of centuries of selfishness and undying vanity. But remember that grandma's words aren't meant to hurt you, but to open your eyes." While Heloisa continued weeping, Laura invited me to go back to the living room, remarking that the patient needed her rest. We sat down to await the other's return, and Laura confided in a soft voice. My granddaughter arrived here extremely tired. She let her heart get entangled in the web of self-esteem. In fact, she should have been sent to one of our hospitals, but Assistant Kusero thought that the home atmosphere and our loving care would be advisable in her case. I must say I was pleased at his decision, as my dear Theresa, her mother, will soon be here. A little patience and everything will come out right. It's just a question of time and serenity. Chapter 20, Notions About the Home. Eager to learn as much as possible from my well-informed hostess, I asked curiously. With so much to do at home, do you still go out to work? I certainly do. We live in a colony of transition, which has as its main purpose apprenticeship and work. Here feminine souls are assigned numerous tasks, in preparation for their return to the planet or their ascent to higher spheres. But is domestic organization in the astral city similar to that on Earth? It's the earthly home which has, for so long, been trying to imitate our domestic institution. Married couples there, with rare exceptions, are still weeding the soil of their feelings, overrun with the bitter herbs of pride and infested with the parasites of jealousy and selfishness. The last time I returned from the planet I arrived here, as is natural, beset by deep illusions. But it happened that during my crisis of wounded pride, I was taken to a lecture given by a great instructor from the Ministry of Elucidation. Since that day, a new current of ideas has penetrated my mind. Could you tell me something of the lessons you received? The lecturer, she continued, a great mathematician, made us realize that, on the plane of spiritual evolution, the home might be compared to a right angle. The vertical line is the feminine sentiment, always gravitating towards the creative inspirations of life. The horizontal line is the masculine mentality, always striving for achievements towards the common progress. The home is the sacred summit, the converging point where man and woman meet to bring about an essential understanding. It is the temple where creatures should reach for a spiritual communion, rather than bodily union. At present there are a great many people on Earth versed in social questions, who advocate various measures and call for a regeneration of domestic life. Some go so far as to state that the family institution is threatened. We must remember that the home is a sublime conquest which mankind is slowly achieving. But can one find, on Earth, the real family structure where all rights and duties are legitimately shared? Most earthly couples pass these sacred hours together in an environment of indifference and cruel selfishness. When the husband appears calm, the wife gives herself up to crises of despair. When the wife keeps humbly silent, her husband tyrannizes her. Neither does the wife attempt to encourage her husband along the horizontal line of his temporal fulfillment, nor does he try to follow his companion in her divine flights of tenderness and sentiment towards the higher planes of creation. In their social contacts, both wear masks, but in the privacy of their home they strip them off, sadly exposing their lack of mutual understanding. As a rule, when one of them comments on his or her respective activities, the other's attention promptly strays far from the subject. When the wife discusses the children, the husband mentally turns his thoughts to his work. When the latter relates some business difficulty, the former's thoughts drift to the dressmaker's fitting room. In these circumstances, it's obvious that the divine angle is far from being properly traced. Two diverging lines are endeavoring in vain to form the sublime vertex, to ascend one more step up the glorious stairway leading to eternal life. This new aspect of the responsibility of marriage ties struck deep into my spirit. Highly impressed, I exclaimed. What a multitude of thoughts this explanation is arousing in me. If we only knew all this while still on Earth. A mere question of experience, my friend, she replied, suffering and tribulations will slowly teach mankind these unavoidable lessons. At present, few realize that the home is a divine institution, within which one must live. with all one's heart and soul. It's often said that all creatures are beautiful when truly in love. Indeed, this is true. During the enchanting period of betrothal, plain creatures display their most charming traits. Any subject seems enchanting even in the most frivolous conversation. Man and woman meet, radiating the full measure of their sublime forces. But when they enter wedlock, many rend the veil of desire and fall back under the influence of the old monsters that tyrannize weak hearts. Gone is all tolerance, and sometimes even brotherly cooperation. The luminous beauty of love gradually dies out, and the couple begins to drift apart, avoiding each other's company, losing the joy of friendly conversation. Henceforth, the well-educated ones respect each other, while the ill-bred ones outwardly manifest their mutual animosity. They don't try to come to a conciliatory understanding. Questions and answers are formulated in dry phrases. Physical intercourse may still be carried on, but the minds are already divorced and following opposite directions. How true your words are! I cried out with feeling. But what can we do, my friend? My kind hostess continued, in the present phase of the planet's evolution, unions between twin souls are rare, and marriages of kindred or even sympathetic souls are tremendously outweighed by a remarkable percentage of probation ties. Most human couples are made up, so to speak, of handcuffed prisoners. Endeavoring to follow the trend of ideas suggested by my initial question, Lizia's mother continued. Feminine souls do not remain inactive here. They are trained to become worthy mothers, wives, sisters, missionaries. The woman's task in the home cannot be confined to a few idle tears of pity and many years of servitude. Of course, today's rash feminist movement is a grievous offense to the true attributes of the feminine spirit. Women aren't meant to set themselves up as rivals to men in offices, and in the different professions and business departments, which are adequate fields for masculine activities. Nevertheless, we are taught here in our colony that there are many dignifying tasks outside the home which are compatible with the feminine sensibility, including nursing, teaching, textile manufacturing, communications, and all kinds of occupations which require patience. Men should learn to endow the domestic circle with the fruit of his experiences, while woman should lighten the burden of man's hard work, giving the home her sweetness and an inspiring atmosphere. Within the family circle, inspiration, outside it, activity. You can't have one without the other. How could a river feed its flow if it were not for the source? On the other hand, how could the water of the source flow on without the riverbed? I couldn't help smiling at that question. After a prolonged pause, Laura resumed the conversation. Whenever the Ministry of Assistance entrusts children to my care here in my house, my working hours are counted as doubled. That will give you an idea of the importance of the task of motherhood on Earth. However, when I am not thus occupied at home, I have my daily tasks in the nursing department. Apart from my granddaughter, who is still recovering, there are no members of our family at leisure. They are all engaged in worthy activities. 8 hours of work per day is an easy program for anyone. I should feel ashamed if I didn't do my part. As she fell silent for a few moments, my thoughts ran on the same interesting topic. Chapter 21. Interesting conversation. Your words, Laura, arouse many questions. If you will pardon my curiosity. Please don't say that, she answered kindly, go on asking. Although I am not in a condition to teach, I can always inform. We both laughed at her remark, and then I inquired, what about the problem of private property in the colony? Does this house, for instance, belong to you? She smiled as she answered. Private property is relative here just as it is on Earth. Our acquisitions are made on the basis of working hours. The hour bonus is, so to speak, our money. It is earned by our own effort and devotion, and may be exchanged for any commodity. The buildings, in general, represent common patrimony under government control. However, each spirit family may obtain a dwelling house, never more than one, on the presentation of 30,000 hour bonus, which may be obtained during a certain period of work. My husband, who arrived here long before me, acquired a house through his persevering efforts. We were physically separated for 18 years, though we remained united spiritually. Richard, however, didn't remain inactive.